Cienfuegos, Cuba. Seryosha Garcia Alvarez suggests I meet him at his office. The view is breathtaking, he promises. You will not be disappointed. On the 69th floor of the Montalbo Savings and Loan Building, the second tallest building in Cuba after Havana's Jose Marti Towers, Señor Alvarez's corner office overlooks both the glittering metropolis and bustling harbor below. It is the magic hour for energy-independent buildings like the Montalbo, that time of the day when its photovoltaic windows capture the setting sun with their almost imperceptible magenta hue. Señor Alvarez was right. I am not disappointed.
Cuba won the zombie war. Maybe that's not the most humble of statements given what happened to so many other countries, but just look at where we were 20 years ago as opposed to where we are now. Before the war, we lived in a state of quasi-isolation, worse than during the height of the Cold War. At least in my father's day, you could count on what amounted to economic welfare from the Soviet Union and their Comecon puppets. Since the fall of the Communist bloc, though, our existence was one of constant deprivation. Ration food, ration fuel. The closest comparison I can make is that of Great Britain during the Blitz. And like that other besieged island, we too lived under the dark cloud of an ever-present enemy. The U.S. blockade, while not as constricting as during the Cold War, nonetheless sought to suffocate our economic lifeblood by punishing any nation that attempted free and open trade. As successful as the U.S. strategy was, its most resounding triumph was allowing Fidel to use our northern oppressor as an excuse to remain in power. "You see how hard your life is," he would say. "The blockade has done this to you. The Yankees have done this to you. And without me, they would be storming our beaches even now." He was brilliant. Machiavelli's most favorite son. He knew we would never remove him while the enemy was at the gates. And so we endured the hardships and the oppression, the long lines and the hushed voices. This was the Cuba I grew up in, the only Cuba I could ever imagine. That is, until the dead began to rise. Cases were small and immediately contained, mostly Chinese refugees and a few European businessmen. Travel from the United States was still largely prohibited, so we were spared the initial blow of the first wave mass migration. The repressive nature of our fortress society allowed the government to take steps to ensure that the infection was never allowed to spread. All internal travel was suspended, and both the regular army and the territorial militias were mobilized. Because Cuba had such a high percentage of doctors per capita, our leader knew the true nature of the infection weeks after the first outbreak was reported. By the time of the Great Panic, when the world finally woke up to the nightmare breaking down their doors, Cuba had already prepared itself for war. The simple fact of geography spared us the danger of large-scale overland swarms. Our invaders came from the sea, specifically from an armada of boat people. Not only did they bring the contagion, as we have seen throughout the world, there were also those who believed in ruling their new homes as modern-day conquistadors. Look at what happened in Iceland, a pre-war paradise so safe and secure they never found the need to maintain a standing army. What could they do when the American military withdrew? How could they stop the torrent of refugees from Europe and Western Russia? Is it no mystery how that once idyllic Arctic haven became a cauldron of frozen blood? And why, to this day, is it still the most heavily infested white zone on the planet? That could have been us, easily, had it not been for the example set by our brothers in the smaller Windward and Leeward Islands. Those men and women from Aguilla to Trinidad can proudly take their place as some of the greatest heroes of the war. They first eradicated multiple outbreaks along their archipelago, then, with barely a moment to catch their collective breaths, repelled not only seaborne zombies, but an endless flood of human invaders too. They spilled their blood so that we did not have to. They forced our would-be latifundista to reconsider their plans for conquest and realize that if a few civilians armed with nothing but small arms and machetes could defend their homeland so tenaciously, what would they find on the shores of a country armed with everything from main battle tanks to radar-guided anti-ship missiles?